Episode number 179.
But I'll tell you that in my experience, if you're very, very good at Facebook, you're not going to be that great at Google, and vice versa.
Welcome to the Be Real Show with Travis Too Tall and Hop, where we talk about life, dreams, social media, and business.
Well, hello, and welcome to the Be Real Show with Travis Too Tall and Huff. Folks, I'm fired up today, and if after this show, you might actually even have better converting Facebook and Instagram ads, as well as we're going to get into the mind of our featured guest, Casey Carroll. Casey, are you ready to be real?
More than anything else in the world, let's do this.
Let's do this. Casey specializes in sales, folks, and knowing where your sales come from, which is obviously most of us. Sometimes we don't know where our sales come from. So we're going to get into that. Also, understanding Facebook ads. And now, more than ever, probably Instagram ads and all the things and fun things you can do with Instagram ads. And he is the founder of Action Advertising Agency. And my man is out there. So I really appreciate you having me on the show today. How's your day going today, Casey?
You know what? In the Northwest, we don't really get a whole lot of nice days. But man, let me tell you, it is a beautiful day outside with no rain, which is a rarity. So I'm definitely soaking it up.
Yeah, absolutely. So yeah. Tell me about this, because I looked into your profile around 3 years ago or so. You started the Action Advertising Agency.
Yep.
And helping businesses and brands and folks that are doing ads understand and essentially giving them the strategies to make better buys right on their advertising.
Yep, absolutely. Yeah. In fact, you know, what's really interesting is that this was actually kind of something that I stumbled into, because at the time I was actually in a couple other businesses, and you know, I could go through the whole like story about all the other businesses I've had that have failed or didn't do that well, but I'll keep it a little bit more abridged. You know, at the time I was actually thinking about getting my MBA and going back into, you know, maybe even a professional salesperson or managing a sales team or something like that. But instead, I kind of just followed my gut instinct and went in direction of advertising, because I actually happened to see some Facebook ads. I know, crazy, right? That were promoting courses and stuff. And so I'm like, you know what? I wonder if I would actually be really good at this, because I can tell you that my past experience working for other people, I hated it. It was like, It was a nightmare waking up every day just having to deal with bosses I thought that were incompetent and all these other, you know, stupid corporate initiatives that made no sense. And I was never a Kool-Aid drinking dude. I tend to be kind of oppositional to authority figures. So I decided to give this a shot. And in the very beginning, it was actually a struggle. It was tough, because it's kind of like, you know, learning a brand new language all over again, or learning a new instrument, you know. Right. It's you're going to suck before you actually get really good at it. And I always kind of wondered, hey, look, you know, I got a sales background. I got a marketing background. I think if you really know how to sell stuff to people, you're actually kind of a natural advertiser, because it's all about, you know, behavior and understanding why people buy or why they do certain things, and really truly, you know, loving that process of learning more about humanity and what will pull triggers and such. And so because I had a lot of that really solid sales background, you know, graduated from Washington State with a professional sales certificate. In fact, I also went to the National Collegiate Sales Competition and represented Washington State University back in 2008. So I had a lot of, like, you know, I've done a ton of sales stuff, in other words. And I realized I was actually a pretty natural fit in being a good advertiser after I really sucked in the beginning, and the rest is history.
Wow. So now when you help clients, what kind of businesses do you typically help? Small and medium-sized businesses that are working on their own ads internally? Yeah. And they need someone to really help guide them to better conversions, better engagements.
Yes and no, actually. Okay. So I have kind of niched down quite a bit into, you know, medical related niches, and then also brick and mortar retail locations that also do, you know, digital advertising and also have a physical location. So like auto dealers, for example, is a prime example of that. But what I do with each client really kind of depends, because you can kind of put businesses in a couple of different buckets. There's businesses that have a traffic problem and then also have a conversion problem. And a conversion problem itself is a sales process. In fact, I would tell you that in most scenarios, most smaller businesses are not really suited to actually start running advertising in the beginning, because, and if this is a common thing you've either said yourself or heard before in the past, people were listening to this, and if you said to yourself, man, these leads suck. If you've ever heard something like that, the reality is the sales process, it actually sucks. And it takes a little bit of, you know, an outside eye to be able to say, oh, okay, well, you have to sell differently. Like, and obviously a referral doesn't sell the same way as a cold traffic customer. There's more of a needs identification process. You need to be able to ask different questions and all that sort of stuff. So some clients need both in the process. Some of them actually have a super solid sales background in which I'm purely just spending all my time focusing on improving results from the advertising perspective. Mm-hmm. And then there's other consulting clients that are kind of in that third bucket that are not necessarily kind of like in between in those two. And that might be, you know, maybe helping set up with offline event, you know, set up data, Facebook attribution, optimization from the ad account perspective and looking at certain things that, that are important towards the overall sales goals. And also, you know, trying to also take a look at things from a holistic perspective. So like, you know, a lot of my peers, they will, you know, focus on purely just driving the lowest cost leads possible. But I've found that in some scenarios, it actually makes a lot of sense to add friction to the opt-in process, you know, by changing a lot of different things, et cetera, to produce more conversions. And that's really what matters. I mean, look, cost per acquisition is the only thing that matters in advertising. If you think anything else, you're lying to yourself. It is not cost per lead. It's not cost per click. It's all that other stuff is implied. But you know, you can't pay your bills with clicks and impressions and reach and all these other metrics that you know that may eventually lead towards a conversion or someone buying something. But really, look, people buying stuff is really the only thing that matters. You know, you're looking for a return on your money if you're advertising. And so I cut straight to what matters. And if that means we pay more per lead, but we get a lower cost per acquisition, I'm okay with that. Right. And I think we all have to. We need to change the narrative on what we're really actually accomplishing in the digital advertising world to not just be clicks and all that other garbage. It needs to be cost per acquisition, only thing that matters.
Right. And so can you line out simply or maybe quickly how a cost of per acquisition campaign would start if someone had like a lead form on their website?
Yeah. So let's talk. Actually, I think it's a natural segue to talk a little about offline events, and I'll kind of tell you a bit of a story. So a couple of years ago, when I was working, with my partner company, we have a joint venture that we do all the automotive stuff with. They were running a lot of brand awareness ads, and they're a creative agency. And so they were like, "Hey, Casey, is there any way that we could like maybe figure out a return on investment for a brand awareness ad?" And I thought he was smoking crack. And I was like, dude, there's no way. I mean, what are you talking about? There's no way you can prove, you know, there's no call to action. I can't track a lead. Like, right. Come on, dude, you're smoking. You're ridiculous. But I did research and I kept doing more research. I actually spent a lot of time on like seeing if there is a way to crack this code because I was sure that there had to be, right? And that's when I stumbled across Facebook offline events. So with Facebook offline events, what it will allow you to do is it'll allow you to actually have Facebook keep track of every single person who has either seen or clicked on your ad up to 28 days afterwards. And then if someone buys up to 28 days after the last time they saw a specific ad or clicked on a specific ad, you can actually upload your sales data from a like a brick and mortar physical location, like an auto dealership, for example. You can upload all that sales data and then you can push that into your Facebook Ads Manager view, and then you can know exactly which specific ads someone decided to walk into a physical location and buy, even if there was no call to action on the ad and it was a brand awareness ad. Wow. So it's crazy what we can do with technology nowadays. I mean, in the past, it's kind of like, hey, I run a radio ad and I might get an increase in sales. But wouldn't it be really nice to know which specific radio spot on which specific channel at which specific time at which gender and which offer you were offering that really drove that outcome? You can't do that with radio. There's no way, you know? Right. But you can with Facebook. And so it's crazy how much data we get. And so when I look at things like cost per acquisition, what I can do because of my using tools like offline events, what I can do is I can bring all that sales data back into, you know, the Ads Manager view. And for example, with just one dealership last year alone, I drove, I think, over 1,180 different ad sets over the course of the entire year, testing different models, different offers, different creative, different brand awareness / engagement posts, doing, really polished videos versus really authentic looking videos, pictures of people who were like, you know, standing in front of their car that the dealership took that we wanted to push out and see if people saw that and wanted to come buy from the dealership afterwards as a result of that sort of stuff. And as a result, you know, little by little over time, you know, we're seeing a 12-to-1, you know, return on ad spend on profit, not on revenue, but actual profit.
Wow.
So, you know, and we can track those profit numbers. I don't track revenue with vehicle sales because, you know, if you sell a $30,000 or $40,000 vehicle, that's great, but how much was profit?
Right.
And that's where, you know, we can actually dig into the gross profit, you know, front plus back profit that a dealership would make in that scenario. And then we can make decisions based off of trends and data on what's actually driving sales and profit, not leads. And it allows me to then have a completely different perspective on what I'm trying to accomplish. And we've seen that over time, you know, we can improve the return on investment that you get, which then allows you to put more money back into the platform and then to be able to maximize it because of the strength of being able to measure your ads, not based on just cost per lead, cost per click, and impressions anymore. Now we can just not even focus on that stuff and just run ads that are have a proven track record of actually driving a sale, even if there was no call to action on that ad.
Wow. That's awesome. I'm going to have to check that out too. Offline events.
Yes.
Now on Instagram, because Instagram is now the hot platform for mm-hmm. people to start advertising in. Mm-hmm. Are you seeing there's a certain type of ad that's working well on Instagram? Or is it just kind of a variety of them? I mean, there's the stories, there's the regular ads. There's I've heard more and more in getting into shopping and making it easy for people to shop on your Instagram.
Yeah. You know, it's really funny. I bought my wedding ring off an Instagram ad.
I'm not
kidding. I really did. Yeah. And so, well, I mean, I guess it depends on the gender.
You have been looking already though. You have been looking already. It wasn't just, but you're in the market. So you literally bought a ring off of Instagram. That's just right there.
Yeah. Yeah. I've also bought, I've bought toys I thought were kind of unique and interesting. I've bought shoes, I think, off of Instagram ads. My wife has bought clothes. I've actually bought a lot of stuff off of Instagram. And I guess, hey, look, if you're a guy, you know, if you put a butt in your Instagram post and then you'll probably sell something. I'm kidding. Don't do that.
Right.
Facebook will actually not be very fond of that one. No, not at all. But in fact, I also bought a carbon fiber ukulele off of Instagram that I learned about on, because of it. Side note. Anyways. So here's the thing. Instagram is a very different platform than Facebook. If you run your Facebook ads on Instagram without any changes whatsoever, either in the creative or the messaging or the offer or anything, if you just do that exact same thing, you are bound to fail on Instagram as an advertiser. So do not treat Instagram as the same platform as Facebook. They're very different. Gotcha. But with that said too, look, you have to test stuff to really kind of get a good understanding of what's going to work really well for a specific product or niche or service or vertical or whatever. So, you know, for example, Square Images or Square Video do very, very well. On Facebook, you've got the luxury of also having a much larger spot to talk about the headline, to talk about, you know, you can highlight the offer in the headline. You know, the copy has to change on Instagram. So it really depends. I mean, like you can maximize for each gender, for each age group, for each interest or category that you're producing. You can kind of maximize like the right combination and the right blend between creative, copy, offer, and also you know, placement on Instagram, but it takes a lot of testing. So the hotness for those who are kind of like wondering, you know, tips and tricks, what I would really recommend is getting very comfortable with testing stuff with lower budgets.
Right.
You can do things with campaign budget optimization and then Facebook will actually place, you know, those ads directly in front of, you could create like, you know, 40 or 50 different ads in a campaign and then just test them all separately or test them all at the same time and let Facebook decide who to show them to. And they're usually pretty good at helping you find them once you have enough data to figure out, you know, who to show those audiences to. And that doesn't even talk about the additional conversion, you know, campaigns that you can run that, for example, like, you know, if you've got a lot of data that you fed your Facebook pixel, which the Facebook pixel, for those who don't know, is a piece of JavaScript that actually goes along your entire website, funnel process, et cetera. You can use it for, you know, retargeting campaigns and building audiences on that sort of stuff. But the pixel data also is a lot smarter than that. So for example, if you've got the purchase event code on an e-commerce, you know, kind of a funnel or something like that, with the moment that someone makes it to the very final thank you page after they've paid, after they whatever, and if you put the purchase event code on the Facebook pixel that's actually on that particular page, what it will do is it'll find It'll keep track of every single person who has became a purchase. That hey, your Facebook profile shows you like these things. And Facebook has 17,000 different data points that they use to convert us into an algorithm, a mathematical equation. Wow. And so what you can do is Facebook will actually start to look at all the people who went to that thank you page as a purchase. And it will find more people just like those. It'll find other people that match that same algorithm of 17,000 different data points. So then you get the right blend of people who are likely to buy your product, people who, and that's why when people think that Facebook is listening to you, they do not access your microphone like that. Everyone thinks that. But I've had some really scary moments where I was dealing with someone who talked about something. And then I also then started to see those ads on my Facebook feed. I'm like, wait a minute, how did this happen?
I've been doing that on Instagram, man. I swear. I've heard it from some crazy stuff, situations in the last like few months that were like, people were saying something that's like not even anything they've ever searched for on and all of a sudden it popped up on their Instagram. My wife has had it happen to us many a time now for like multiple years. I remember we were in Vegas one time at the airport there ready to roll out. She's like, I think I want a Starbucks this. And all of a sudden, like 30 seconds, this thing popped up on her Instagram. It was like, holy crap.
Yeah,
There's something to it. I don't know exactly what they're doing, but
I can explain some of it too, actually. So I'll tell you, with 17 different thousand different data points, they will look at the things you comment to other people. They are almost, you know, using artificial intelligence, it's almost scary how accurate they can get in predicting behavior. Like a couple of years ago, I think I falsely actually said this was Facebook that did this in a previous podcast on a different podcast, but actually it turns out it was Target that did this. A couple of years ago, Target was in the news because based on analyzing shopping purchase behavior, they were able to predict that a woman was pregnant before she even knew. And that, and they started serving her, you know, maternity-based ads and pregnancy-based ads and all that sort of stuff.
I think I heard this story too.
Right? And this is a couple of years ago, right? And, and all they had to do was analyze shopping data.
Right.
Because big data can predict us a lot more than you think.
Right.
That you can. And so, for example, in a scenario where, hey, someone talked about this and then it showed up in a certain feed or, you know, or maybe you saw something along the lines after the fact, even though you personally never searched anything whatsoever. Well, here's what Facebook does have. Facebook has IP address data. If they're finding that you were talking next to your friend, they already know your phone's IP address. You're standing right next to that person. If that person had searched or liked or commented or anything like that related to that word and it was next to you at the same exact time, Facebook might use that data to then say, oh, maybe there's a likelihood that this person might also want to see this because I saw that they were also at a Starbucks location with their IP address like a week ago. So let's show that Starbucks ad to them at the same time and see what happens. And this is all happening instantly, all the time. Their targeting algorithm is so incredibly strong and powerful. When it turns you into an algorithm, if you match up with an audience, it's turned into a purchase on a page somewhere else. They monitor dwell time. They monitor IP addresses. They monitor, you know, all of the people that you associate with, the people that you like, etc. And granted, you know, obviously privacy is a huge deal nowadays. But you know, the world of getting very, you know, customized data that is very specific to you because it knows you better than you even know yourself is the reason why Facebook, you know, is one of the most dominant and valuable advertising platforms in the entire world.
Oh yeah. The best, crazy, buy, huh? The best buy for your money, baby. Best buy for your money. I've been saying that for many years now.
Oh yeah.
Started 10 years ago. I mean, I used to say that was during the heydays when things were very cheap.
Oh yeah.
Real cheap for
Facebook. Cost per click in the pennies.
It was. Yeah, you could get page likes for like literally a penny for like a page like conversion on a worldwide audience. You know, there was some weird stuff that would show up in there here and there, but a lot of it was really realistic, you know, but now it's just the cost, obviously, because so many people want to advertise.
And here's the thing too. It still is a very, very valuable platform. I mean, the way that I look at it is like this, you know, when you look at your entire advertising, you know, marketing wheel, there is a lot of things that go into that, that you're not really necessarily sure if the relationship between each other is producing, like which one's better at top of funnel, which one's better at bottom of funnel, which one is great at creating awareness, but not necessarily great at driving leads on the site or eventually conversion or eventually purchases. We can understand the contextualized differences between each advertising platform. Like for example, you know, using a tool called Facebook attribution, you can actually see which platform is great at creating top of funnel awareness and which one is actually really good at creating bottom of funnel conversions. So to give you an example of that, we learned not too long ago for one of our dealerships that Facebook is an absolute monster at creating top of funnel awareness. So I'm running ads, model specific stuff to these individuals, but they might not necessarily want to go to the website and actually shop at that moment. So I can see that, you know, maybe up to 28 days later, they'll go to the website. Well, actually what they'll do is they'll Google the name of the business. They will see a Google AdWords ad that says that name, click on that because that's the first thing they see, go to the website, create a conversion, and then actually buy a vehicle within 28 days. Wow. So I can see the contextualized relationship between Google and Facebook and also other paid platforms like native advertising platforms like Taboola and Outbrain and, you know, maybe Yahoo Gemini, or if you want to see the relationship between Google My Business and conversions, whether they're greater at top or bottom of funnel, you know, you can really see that difference. And so it allows us as advertisers to then spend our money from and look at our marketing wheel rather than individual digital silos like Facebook and Google being different platforms.
Right.
Instead, what we can do is we can say, look, if we know that Google's really good at creating the bottom funnel conversions better than Facebook is, but Facebook's much better at getting people aware and interested,
right,
and, you know, in the platform, and then maybe even trusting the business because they're seeing happy pictures of people, you know, standing in front of their vehicles from the dealership and stuff.
Absolutely.
And running ads to those to try to convert them later on, for example. And if I'm getting people to that last mile, but Google converts, what you should do is spend more money maybe on your Google search or Google AdWords campaigns for bottom of funnel,
right,
and spend more of your money on Facebook for the top and middle because it's a better advertising allocation for your money in that way, you know? Right. So these are the things we can do now. These are the things where no longer do digital platforms have to be in a silo. We can play nicely. Facebook can play nicely with Google now.
Oh, yeah. I think they do business together too on a wholesale level too, don't they? They do some business together, I think.
I think they might, but I think, you know, from the advertisers that I talk to, you know, here's what I found. People who are really good at Facebook, for example, I mean, I don't like to use the word expert. I'm not going to use it in this scenario, but I will say that I'm pretty darn decent at Facebook.
Right.
And I think it's obviously
run a few campaigns. My man has run a few thousands, a few 10,000 campaigns at least.
Yes, I've spent a decent amount of money on Facebook, so I understand it very well. And it's also the only platform that I've really focused all my energy on. I've tried doing some Google stuff, but I'll tell you that in my experience, if you're very, very good at Facebook, you're not going to be that great at Google, and vice versa.
Right.
So I think sometimes some advertising agencies pitch either Google or Facebook as like the only platform to focus on, the best thing since sliced bread, and that they can do it all for you. If you come across an agency that says they can run Facebook and also Google ads at the same time with equal efficiency and skill, they are lying to you. It is not possible. There's no way you can keep up with all the changes on the Facebook platform and Google and still be very, very good in the process. You'll be pretty good at both, or you might be better at one but kind of okay at the other. But the reality is, look, both platforms have their merit. Both platforms have their strengths and weaknesses. What you should do is hire the best person for each platform and just make sure that they play nicely together and that they understand that I'm feeding Google's bottom of funnel conversion campaigns and I'm okay with that. And Google is doing a good job at converting the traffic that I'm creating, that I'm struggling to create because maybe the platform is not the right one for that sort of stuff.
Right.
So
they finally get interested and they type it in, like you said, in a Google search. And
bingo.
Then boom.
Yep, exactly. So yeah, I mean, I think the days of like, you know, advertising companies just positioning themselves as the only platform to focus on, or you should only be doing Google or whatever. Like, come on, dude, that's just not really how it works. And
right.
And if your digital advertising isn't looked at from a holistic perspective from the top down, then you're guilty of also, you know, not really giving the right kind of attention to digital to make it work.
I agree, man. And I hope everyone's ready to get serious and get real because we're about to take you, my man, into our top 10. Are you ready?
Woo!
Let's do this. Hot sauce. Put some hot sauce on it. Apple or Android?
Ooh, I used to be an Android. Oh, so I worked for the wireless world back in the day, and I used to have like nothing but droids for a very long time. And I have switched over to Apple ever since 2016, and I have never looked back. So I'm an Apple guy now.
Apple, Netflix or YouTube?
Netflix for sure. I'm sorry. Their content that they produce is just outrageous. You know, like I like YouTube. Don't get me wrong, but Netflix, I mean, come on. There's no comparison.
Literally, you just go, escaping an adventure. You don't even know what's going to happen. You're just like, choose your own adventure. There's so many dang content totally. To watch.
Like Black Mirror, for example. Like, you know, I'm a huge fan of Black Mirror. That is such a, I mean, their original content's just out of control, man. You know, like I watch Jessica Jones, I watch all of the superhero stuff on Netflix, and there's always new content they're producing all the time, including Sandra Bullock movies. I didn't even know Netflix feature films and stuff. It's crazy, and also Stranger Things. I mean, come on, if you think you know YouTube, you're wrong.
Yeah, I think YouTube is just used a little differently, like you totally. Said. You know, it's just used a little different. Instagram or Twitter.
I'm not really much of a Twitter guy, so I've got to be Instagram for sure.
IG. Chicken, steak, or fish?
Ooh, man, that's tough. Can I say all three?
All three, yeah. Combo plate. I like your style. I like your style.
A combination.
A laptop or an iPhone?
Ooh, that's they're used differently, right? Definitely. So, I mean, that's like apples and oranges in my opinion. So I have a desktop that I would do all my work. In fact, I've got like a 44-inch monitor that I do all my work on.
Hammer, yeah. There's nothing like a desktop.
Oh yeah, desktops, yeah, totally different. But like if I had to pick between a laptop or an iPhone to work, I mean, I use them differently, but I would definitely pick laptop.
Laptop, yeah. There's still nothing like it. Even though the apps have just gotten a lot better on these phones now. It's amazing.
I think people also tried to like make a switch from laptops to iPads at one point. And dude, I just don't see how you can actually do that sort of stuff.
Oh yeah, yeah, you know? Yeah. Unless, I mean, iPad is just it's like great when you're on the airplane or something like that. You're just browsing and clicking and watching videos, but it's not efficient for work. I mean, it really isn't even good for responding on email.
No. In fact, you know, I made the mistake of getting the iPad Pro or the 12-inch one too. I immediately regretted it the moment I got it because I was used to having like a 9.7-inch iPad where I can just walk around the house and just watch videos or do whatever I wanted to at any point in time. But man, this is like behemoth.
Right.
If you drop this on your foot, you'd be getting foot surgery because
you have a toe gone.
It would get severed, man. That thing is heavy as hell. And I'm like, why the hell did I get this thing? It was a waste of my money. And now I want to go back to a smaller iPad. So, you know, hey, note to self, don't get the 12-inch iPad Pro. It's a waste of money.
Go for the small ones.
Go for the small ones. Steve Jobs is right.
More economical, but also lighter.
Yeah, exactly. Won't break your foot as much. Maybe slightly fractured.
Gotta take a toe out. Right. Spotify or Pandora?
I'm old school, man. Actually, so it's Pandora. And here's a funny story about Pandora. So the other day, I was listening to Bruno Mars on Pandora because, you know, hey, I just stick with what's really worked for me. Sure. And all of a sudden, the dreaded band Nickelback comes on.
Wow.
Yeah, and I was just immediately disgusted and wanted to throw my computer out the door. Like, how dare you put Nickelback on my Bruno Mars channel? But I posted about that on Facebook, and my friends all made fun of me for like, wait a minute, you still use Pandora? I guess I'm old school. Yeah, I still use it. It works for me. So, you know, make fun of me all you want. But, you know, hey, I pay $50 a year for premium and it works really well. So.
Oh, yeah, it's a great value. And also, yeah, it's fun to just kind of not have to worry about what exactly is coming up next. They just throw a mix into you.
Totally.
Spotify is getting better with the playlist, though. So I'll tell you that. That's how they're kind of come back at, you know, you pick a vibe and then, you know, it just takes you on a journey.
I would say Spotify is almost kind of like Apple Music, though, kind of, right? I mean,
it is. They've just really done a good job with the playlist, I think. That's the key thing that separates Spotify.
Yeah.
And then, like, they have a new Discovery playlist, or they'll have a new Music Friday playlist, new Dance Music Friday. They'll have Release Radar, where they're doing different remixes coming out all the time. Yeah. And so, like, you're just able to kind of absorb what's currently being produced. And then also, if you just want to go, like, weekend vibes, you know, it's going to take you on to some kind of, like, weekend, more chill. I think they've really maximized that part of it. Or obviously if you just want to listen to the whole, album, you know, of an artist. But I think they've really done a great job, better than anyone. And I think that's why they're so successful, is the playlist.
I really got to give Spotify a shot, because I know some Spotify diehards that just like swear by it. And I've just been super old school. Like, hey, I've got XM radio. I think people make fun of me for even having XM radio, but I'm like, yeah, I got XM radio. But yeah.
Well, they do a good job on XM too. It's hard to go. So XM does a really good job. But yeah, they've done I think Spotify is making huge leaps into playlisting. And I think that's what that's taking them to the next level.
I think Spotify is also launching a podcast.
Yes. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Your show is on Spotify, actually, folks.
Woo.
If you wanted to know. Movies or video games?
Movies, for sure. I mean, well, let me give you some context. If so, I used to play video games religiously back in the day. And man, like I had Halo parties where I would stay up, you know, with my friends in high school. Oh yeah. Like connecting via an actual like LAN port and stuff like that with someone else in another room. Like someone's looking at your screen and stuff. So I did video games forever. And then I met, you know, the love of my life and realized that if I wanted to keep her around, I probably shouldn't play video games anymore. And so I stopped playing video games probably like in my late 20s and also just realized, I'm like, oh my God, like when I looked at Call of Duty, I would, over the course of like a couple months, spend like literally days playing video games, like literally like 48 to 50 hours of actual time in the course of a couple months. And I'm like, whoa. That's not making me money. I should be doing something else with that time instead.
And with movies, it's like you know, watch a few movies a week or whatever. And it's not like you're so...
There's an end. There's an end to it. Versus video games, it's like, you know, I feel like video games are just like the ultimate addiction machine.
Oh, dude, yeah.
Because they're just geared towards like, hey, by the way, we've got new upgrades. Or like, got new packs.
Worlds. A new world that we just...
New created. Worlds, new downloads. Hey, you want to get this new... you know, custom weapon or something like that. Or, hey, you want to improve your rankings in the world for this, you know, battle match type stuff. Yeah. I never got into, in fact, I got out of video games before PlayerUnknown Battleground. And then also,
it all like, kind of went to the cloud in a way.
Yeah, it really did. And I got out of it before that happened, which I'm grateful. At least probably my bank is probably more the most grateful of it. Cause I'm actually being at least somewhat more productive with my time, but yeah, I mean like, anything where it has like there's no end point to it, like a video game, for example, I just find that I get too addictive to it and I just get sucked into it. And it's almost like I'd rather just try to have the discipline of not only keeping my marriage happy with my wife and not spending all my time on video games instead of hanging out with her or whatever. But also, you know, not even getting tempted to even want to get involved in that world again, because I know I'm going to get lost into it and it's going to suck.
Right. I don't think you are, brother. I think you're going to be productive and you're not going to have to worry about it. Yeah. Reading books or listening to books?
Oh, man, this is so tough, because I would tell you that I'm way too ADHD to even read books, but I still do. So I read books only when I fly, though, I feel like, and I specifically hold books, and I try to find places to fly so I can read, because that's like the only way I can actually be able to pay attention enough and not get distracted by everything else that's going on in my life, is if I'm forced to sit down in a tube that's going 500 miles an hour with a bunch of strangers where I have nothing else to do except for read. So I read when I'm flying, but I've never really got into listening to books, because like I work from home and I have my home office. I've also got, you know, a team in the Philippines as well for my company and stuff. But if I try to like write an email and listen to an ebook at the same time, I'm doing neither one of them very well.
Right.
So yeah. So I'd like to get into audiobooks. A lot of my, you know, if you commute, if you travel, like since I don't commute, you know, it doesn't really benefit me to get into audiobooks, but yeah, I would definitely go with reading instead of audio.
Totally. Yeah, there's nothing like a good book. So stocks, crypto, or real estate?
Ooh, real estate. So I used to be a Bitcoin miner at one point. I actually spent like 20 grand on Bitcoin mining equipment back in like 2015, 16.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and I was like, and I had free like, sorry, what?
Did you make some dough?
I was lucky to break even, but here's the frustrating part. Like, so at the time I sold all my Bitcoin holdings between like 250 to 500 bucks or so.
Yeah.
And then like 2 years later out of nowhere, it suddenly was worth $18,000.
Right.
And so I would have actually been a millionaire if I just held on to my Bitcoin instead of selling it, but I sold it to pay back my credit cards, which I put all those Bitcoin miners on so I could, you know, just try the operations or whatever. So, crypto is just, it's way too volatile. I've made money in crypto. You know, don't get me wrong. I've had Bitcoin I forgot about that all of a sudden accumulated a bunch of money, and then I found it.
Yeah, there you go.
I got money.
Bitcoin cash.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, no, like, so I've had that happen to me, and I've made decent money. But for me, you know, like I actually used to be a real estate flipper, and so I understand real estate very well, but also I understand market timing and market cycles. And so I got out of real estate back in 2016 because I used to actually flip rent-to-own properties, and I did like 75 of them in like 10 different states, but kind of got sick of it. And so I want to go back into buying properties again, but I'm waiting for motivation. And to be real, I mean, until there is a strong you know, buyer's market where there's more inventory and there's, you know, less avenues for people to sell, there's not many opportunities for creative investors like myself. So, but you know, back in 2014, I did buy a house with no money down. I took over payments. It's called a subject to transaction, where you take the property subject to the existing liens, encumbrances, and loans, and all that stuff. And so I had built-in financing, and you know, I've been renting it out since 2014. It's gotten $500 or $600 a month in cash flow, and it's appreciate and zero money down too, which is great. But it's appreciated, I think, like $200,000 since that point. And so like, yeah, I'm in love with real estate. And also, I bought my first house when I was 20. I still live in that house. I've been remodeling it, but we're going to be looking to probably buy a bigger home and start a family, you know, in the next like 2 or 3 years or so, when the market hopefully starts to slow down even more. But, right. We're going to turn this into a rental forever too. I mean, the cash flow would be very, very attractive. And it's hard to kind of turn down, you know, an asset that you can depreciate on your taxes where you make money, appreciate over time where you'll get, you know, liquidity, but at least equity, right. And also potentially cash flowing. You profit three ways with real estate. So it's a no-brainer in my opinion.
Yeah, always one of my good clients, he always says, I got, you know, X amount of families out working for me to go pay my, you know, because he owns about 16 homes.
Nice.
As he does rentals on, and he's just a smart guy. And he's always like,
right.
They all go to work and they're, you know, they're working to, you know, then come back and pay for the house. And so it's just an interesting way of thinking about it. And it also helps them out too. So it's a double, you know, factor. They can't probably afford to buy a house. So now they're in a house for a good, decent price. And then he always said too, that the renter's market, isn't as volatile, then, you know, if you're, you know, in a downside market and the prices drop, you know, you usually your renters aren't getting a ton of decrease in their rent.
Right.
You know what I mean? Right. So you're not losing that. But now we're taking you into a couple more follow-up questions, my man here. What is one of your favorite meals after a long, hard day? What is one of your favorite meals you could sit down to?
Wifey
and...
I was born and raised in Hawaii. So to me, like soul food.
Oh,
soul food is all about, you know, like, you know, Kalua pork or pork lalau or chicken katsu and all these other, you know, Hawaiian spam. I love spam. I know I'm crazy. And people who listen to this are like, why the hell does this guy like spam?
Well, yeah, you grew up on it.
Yeah, I grew up in, I mean, that's the culture, man. So, so I would say like anything Hawaiian, after a long day is something that is like my perfect soul food. But also like I also recently have been kind of going into the keto diet quite a bit. So I don't really get the luxury of rice anymore, you know?
Right. Cutting the carbs, baby. Cutting the carbs.
Carbs. Yeah, exactly. Like, yeah, carbs are the enemy. Like, yeah. But I love keto so far. It's been really cool. And it really has helped me quite a bit with, food allergies and stuff. And, right. And also on top of that too, like, you know, I've, just recently, like a couple of weeks ago, I just did a 207-mile bike ride over the course.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. I wasn't as like deep into keto when I was doing that, cause you still need carbs obviously to like have energy to train, ride and stuff. But all in all, I mean, like I'm a lot healthier now than I used to be. And it's all entirely due to like, you know, being very strict with my food, but still of course, letting your hair down every once in a while is not a bad idea too.
Yeah. You got to enjoy life too, brother. You got to enjoy life. Whatever makes you happy, I think is the most important thing in your soul.
Oh, yeah.
However, obviously, yeah, we got to live a happier life or, you know, healthier, try to cut the stuff out that we don't need and eat a, you know, more of a whole grain, a whole food type of life.
Totally.
Instead of all the box prepared stuff. It's hard too, though, at the end of the day. So it's, as an entrepreneur, it's the best thing you do is just you motivate yourself, you know, with what works best for you. But yeah, keto is legit, man.
Yeah, 1,000%.
Yeah, it is definitely legit.
I've lost some serious pounds from it too, man. And I just love seeing that difference in the scale. And my energy's gone up, which is crazy. Like in the very beginning, you feel like you're like, you've just lost like half your IQ points.
Right.
And you just can't focus. You can't think straight. You're like, man, this is the worst thing in the world. But once you actually
once you get the vibe going.
Dude, it's like you have more energy than you've ever had before. And you're like, how is this possible? I mean, and the reality is like your body's using fat for fuel. And suddenly you're like, whoa, my brain's like a ship. It's like skyrocketing into the atmosphere a bit, and it allows you to focus in ways you couldn't do before when you're like trying to digest a food baby and dying slowly at the same time, you know.
Right. So carb belly and sugar.
Totally. Oh yeah, for sure.
Well, one last question here. If Be Real tonight for dinner, you could sit down with anyone in the world for dinner, who would it be?
Ooh, that's a good question. I would probably say, did that have to be living or dead?
It doesn't matter.
Doesn't matter. Okay. I would probably want to sit down if anyone like right now at this point in time, probably with Jeff Bezos, just to learn about his what took him to get to Amazon. You know, like Bill Gates is a very close second. I actually really idolized Bill Gates growing up, or even Lance Armstrong. You know, like I'd like to know what was going through his head when he was going through the doping stuff and all that sort of stuff. I'm generally very curious about a lot of different things. But yeah, I mean, Jeff Bezos alone, you know, he's in my backyard. He's in the same state I live in.
Right.
Learning about, you know, where he left his very cushy, you know, financial job into starting Amazon and basically starting over. And I've done that myself too. Like what was that fuel that got him going and stuff. And so that's probably who I'd pick for sure.
I always love that. Have you seen that one of those first photos where he's got like just a cardboard Amazon sign?
Yeah. And he drove like a Nissan, like a Honda Civic. I think he drove this green Honda Civic, even when he was like a multimillionaire in stock value, he still stayed humble. He still, you know, preserved his capital and like, look, you know, you don't become the most wealthiest human being on the planet by accident, right? And especially like my dude went through a divorce and lost $40 billion and he's still the richest dude on the planet. Like that is crazy when you think about that. So yeah, like a dude like him, that would be someone where I'd really like to learn more from someone like him.
Like how do you scale? How the hell do you scale like this?
How do you go from that cardboard box, you know, Amazon sign behind your desk, driving a green Honda Civic to having the most expensive divorce of all time and still being the wealthiest person afterwards in the world? That's crazy.
And Amazon trucks everywhere now. You're getting less and less deliveries from UPS and USPS.
But you know, they got bullseyes on their back too, man. Like, so I watched John Oliver the other day, and John Oliver was talking about how, you know, the employees of Amazon at the warehouses and stuff have all these issues. And I'm like, oh, man, there is a price to pay, unfortunately, for like, you know, cheap stuff on the internet and having one day shipping now and stuff. But yeah, I mean, with all that said, I mean, there's you can't like Nike sweatshops were a huge problem back in the day. Microsoft had antitrust issues. Facebook,
$5 billion data privacy.
Billion with a B. That is nuts when you think about that, right?
Right. And
so I think, you know, the more successful you are, well, okay. I don't know exactly which rapper said this. Maybe it was actually Too Short, but someone said, no, maybe it was Biggie. More money, more problems. They're not lying.
Totally. It's the hardest thing about business. And so, yeah, you're right. I mean, it's amazing to see how Jeff has built something that has truly changed the world. And I think they're going to even go into more verticals. I've heard healthcare, all sorts of stuff. You might be getting your insurance from Amazon health insurance, because they know all your data about what you eat and they know how healthy you are already. They got all these other pinpoints. They say Amazon has more data than any company in the world.
Yeah, advertising is actually, they're going to really go.
They're going to kill it. Yeah.
Advertising pretty soon as well. So I think that's another wave that's going to be a pretty big
cash
opportunity for you,
my man.
Yeah. Hey, you know what? I think when it makes sense, yeah, I'll definitely go onto a new platform for sure. And I think Amazon is a big opportunity in the future. I haven't had a lot of opportunities to really play with the platform or test anything out or whatever, but it is definitely on my radar and it's something that I want to jump into at some point in the future.
Oh yeah. They're like the third largest advertiser right now, and social media advertiser.
Is it really that much?
Yep. Facebook, YouTube, Amazon. Facebook, YouTube, Amazon.
It's interesting that Snapchat's not in that equation anymore.
Well, they've been doing all right, but I mean, I think that the numbers are a lot bigger on Amazon.
Audience is huge.
Oh yeah. It's huge, dude. Huge.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah.
If you could give our listeners, my man, one last real talk thought, can you bring some knowledge from us?
Look into the data, focus on the numbers, and always let the data dictate your decisions. And if you don't know the data, you need to find other tools, platforms, or people that can help you find that sort of stuff.
And where's the best place for people to find more information about you and your business?
Absolutely. So you can find me on facebook.com/actionads with a plural agency. I'm probably going to have to fight the person who has Action Ad Agency to the death to get that name back, unfortunately. But or you can find me on facebook.com/CaseyCarroll Live, CaseyCarroll Live.
Well, folks, you've been hanging out with Casey Carroll and Travis Too Tall and Huff. I want to thank you again for your time today, and let's keep being real.
What another epic episode. And if you enjoyed the episode today, can you please do me a favor and subscribe to our podcast, The Be Real Show, on iTunes or your favorite podcast platform? And also take a little time today, if you don't mind, and give your boy T Huff a review. I would really super appreciate it. And thank you so much for listening today.